Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker McBride here, joined as always by my co-host, Matt Wasko. How's it going today, Matt?
Good. Good. I'm glad to be here. And as always, episode 27. So, and we are 1 week away from my powerlifting meet.
It's getting close.
It is.
How are you feeling about it?
I just did a post this morning. I was, I wasn't anticipating. I've been pretty cool about it the whole time. A little butterflies. Yeah, I don't know why. Just little butterflies. I know I should be competitive, like I said, but I'm just worried. I'm just, you know, it's just me and the bar, and I'm not going to worry about my competition. So, you know, this is going to be really about the experience, you know, and I've read through the rule book. I'll probably read through it one more time. And not to be too graphic, but it'll be the first time I've worn like tighty whities in like 30 years. So that's going to be different for me.
Yeah, that's actually a rule.
It is a rule.
They don't have to be specifically tighty whities, but they have to be briefs.
Right.
Briefs that cut off on the hip crease.
Yeah, no legs.
Yeah,
to your, have any to legs your undergarments. So yeah, I'm going to have to go out this week and get that. I've never done smelling salts. I went ahead and got those. I'll experiment with that a little bit this week. And Parker's going to be kind of running the show as far as what I'm going to lift. So he's going to be there as well. And so, you know, obviously I'm going in with just a little bit of a janky shoulder, but nothing should hold me back. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I suppose there's two lights, a white light and a
red light.
Mm-hmm. Right. And
three judges. And you've got to get two out of three white lights.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think that, like if I come out of there, like we were talking this morning, I know I could do a 365 bench right now, but there is a problem with maintaining form at that level. So if I walk out there with a 335, I'm gonna be happy with that, and then worry about the heavier weights later.
So I think for your first competition, that's a fantastic goal. It'll kind of show you where you're at, get you acclimated to competitions if that's something that you want to keep doing.
I mean, I think I do, unless I go in there, it's just a horrible experience, but, you know, I plan on just, it's just going to be me and the bar. I'm just following the rules. So I'm not going to worry about my competitors that much. If they bench a lot of weight, that's great. If they don't, and I tend to be at the top of my division, I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just going to go in and kind of do my thing so I'm really looking forward to it because it's going to be a different experience for me. I haven't competed in any type of sporting athletic event since I was in college. So this is going to be, it's going to be kind of fun because I take that back. I did play flag football for a long time after college. I forgot about that, but I haven't competed in anything like on a higher level in a long time, for at least 30 years. So this is going to be new for me. And like I said, we've looked up the, tested rankings of what my age group and everything. So I think I'll be okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like you said, you don't worry about the other people that are there.
Right.
Right. That's not what powerlifting is about.
You know, right.
Powerlifting is not about you trying to outlift the other guy. I mean, it is at a certain level, but it's really about you and the weight, you and the bar, like you said, and just beating what you've done before. You know, whatever you did last time,
right,
do better this time, and keep compounding, keep building, keep setting new personal records. So this is good to get a baseline in. You've done a ton of bench pressing in the past, but never in a competition. And you know, learning the commands, learning the cues, learning the rules is a whole other adjustment.
Yeah, it is really, because as you've experienced, and I did a set of 15 competition lifts where I re-racked it every time. Like I actually went through and racked and re-racked in between each rep. And because that last command of rack, I have a tendency, I get it up, let's rack it. And so out of 15 reps, I told, I think Fallon was spotting me, and I, you know, it was a weight that she, I wasn't not worried about her spotting me, but just for her to give me the command. And she, I said, if I rack it before you say rack, you have permission to smack me. And so I did all of them. I think on the second round, I ended up hitting, I started to rack slightly before she said rack. So she got the opportunity to smack me on the head. So, yeah. So anyway, so yeah, it's been fun. I mean, I, you know, like I said, my life's been pretty crazy. I haven't had a lot of routine, to my life. And, now that, you know, we're here at any time, I think that that's going to give me a little more routine. And I've really found I'm a creature of routine. I want that set calendar, because then that helps me set up my eating schedules, right? For some reason, that's important to me. I'm not, I will actually say the nurses have it over me on that. I like my day to be set. So I commend the nurses that have irregular schedules and they figure it out. Cause I know for me, cause I have to eat an incredible amount of protein and a lot more calories than I typically can put down in three meals. So I need to know what my routine is so I can hit those extra meals outside of that and plan. And when it's, things are kind of up in the air, this makes it a little more difficult.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. Eating schedule.
Yeah.
We have our Fit Focus here. It is an article about intermittent fasting. So we've talked briefly a couple different times about intermittent fasting on the podcast, but never really covered it in depth. And we're going to kind of cover it in depth today. So the article says, what is intermittent fasting and how does it work? And the article basically goes through 10 of the primary benefits of intermittent fasting. So the basics of intermittent fasting, if you guys don't know, it's basically grouping your eating time every day into a small number of hours, typically 8 hours. And then the other 16 hours of the day, you do not eat at all. So for example, you may eat from noon until 8 p.m.
Right.
And then you cut it off and you will not eat again until noon the next day. And that is a intermittent fast.
Right. And you're doing this weekly, or are you doing this like every, when do you choose it for yourself to do intermittent fasting?
For myself?
Mm-hmm.
I would say if you do it once a week, that's probably not enough. I typically will, and I go back and forth, right? I don't intermittent fast every day. I also make sure to do intermittent fast on a fairly regular basis, because I find that if I don't, I start to feel a difference. Mm. And we can go in later as to kind of what that difference is.
Sure.
But I prefer to do it every day if I can.
Wow.
And I know that's doesn't always get done, but I got in the habit. Before I was a trainer, I'd never intermittent fasted. I would get up, I would eat breakfast, you know, and then you start work, you take a lunch break, you eat lunch, you know, and you eat dinner at dinner time. And that's what I always did. But as a trainer, you know, you have to be up and going and starting work at 5 a.m.
Right.
And I know you will get up at 3:30 if that's what it takes in order to get your breakfast done before you train. But
right.
I didn't want to do that, and I did at first, but then I got to the point where I quit eating before I started training.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I would probably be training sometimes till you know, around noontime, from 5 a.m. to noontime. And sometimes I would eat during that time frame, but a lot of the time I would not. And so I wouldn't even have my first meal of the day till afternoon. I may come home after training, make some eggs, you know, have kind of a breakfast style meal at like 1 p.m.
Right.
And then, you know, eat a snack or something mid-afternoon, and then have dinner, have a nice large dinner at 6 or 7 p.m. And then that's it for the day. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. But like you said earlier, it all depends on schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that I can get in some big meals, big protein-filled meals during that time frame if I'm going to intermittent fast. If I give myself an eight-hour window, but then I can barely have any time to eat during that window, then it's not going to work out very well. So if I have to get three meals a day in order to get my protein in, I will. If I can kind of shrink it down to maybe two big meals with a smaller meal in between in like 8 hours, I will do that.
So what does your protein intake look like in that? Because I know you can put down a ton of protein in one meal, but.
Well, so if I did like a two meal a day, you know, I'd probably do six eggs, glass of milk, you know, something like that, breakfast time. Maybe, you know, maybe like a ground beef patty or something like that. So that's going to run you.
Must be about 50 or 60.
Yeah, if I do the ground beef patty, 60-ish, maybe closer to 70. But then dinner time, you know, I would do north of 16 ounces of beef a lot of times, and that's another probably going to be 70, over 100. Yeah.
I mean, 16 times 5, that's going to be, I guess that, well, you're probably about 16 times 6 or 16 times 5.
Probably 7. I would usually eat like lean beef, some kind of lean beef, 7. Like a sirloin or something.
So you'll be over 100 on that, because 6 would be...
That's true. That would be over 100. Yeah. So I could still, I may not hit 200. If I get a little snack in, I would hit 200.
Right.
But I'd come in close to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if I weren't in the stage that I'm in, for two reasons. One, I'm probably can't do intermittent fasting for what I'm trying to prepare for.
Agreed. Yeah.
And secondly, I am jealous of it though, because I know, and twice this week I had one day where I was running late and I didn't get my meal in the morning, and I didn't get something in me until like almost 9:30 or 10, like this, like a week ago. And I felt it coming on, like my migraines. And I don't know why it's so connected to food for me. I want to have like some testing done, you know, like a food sensitivity testing, and see if there's something there. Because I, you know, it's annoying not knowing exactly why it is that when I remove food from my equation, it seems to trigger, you know, not a migraine. And if there was a way for me to fast, I would love to do that. But I started having this problem like 20 years ago where I couldn't, you know, fast without getting really bad migraines.
That's interesting. I would love to dive a little deeper and figure out why that is.
Yeah, because I had an MRI done because I had so many bad migraines, they finally decided to do a brain scan and see if there was some type of vascular issue. And they said, everything looks normal. And I was like, well, that doesn't help. You know, there wasn't any tumors or, you know, vein irregularities going on. And so that came up, you know, negative for anything. And so, which is both good and bad, because then I still don't know exactly what's going on, why I struggle so much with migraines. But it's something I've been struggling with for a good 25 years now.
Interesting. Well, yeah. So this article talks about 10, it says 10 evidence-based health benefits of intermittent fasting. And it kind of is a, compilation of some different studies and some different, proven benefits. And I know, Matt may not quite have the experience with intermittent fasting, but I know I do mm-hmm. enough to confirm a lot of these. And if I did not experience them, I also will put that in there. Number one, I don't think these are necessarily in any particular order, but the first one is changes in the function of hormones, cells, and genes.
Right.
So that seems pretty significant.
They're very significant.
a big way to start it off. You know, you think about intermittent fasting, like, oh, cool, I eat a little bit less. But here we have changes in the function of hormone cells and genes. And basically the changes that it lists here, number one, insulin level.
Yeah.
And that makes complete sense.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It allows your insulin levels to drop whenever you're not intaking any carbohydrates, any sugars.
So obviously that's going to burn fat because your fat burns fast and hot first.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to allow you to burn fat. Human growth hormone level. So it says your blood level of HGH may increase dramatically during intermittent fasting, which helps promote fat burning and muscle gain. HGH is, it's like the hormone that children have. Like I know it's in, I just from having a baby recently been looking into it, it's in breast milk, right? Mm-hmm. And it's what helps the baby grow.
Yeah.
Right. So there's also a lot of bodybuilders and people that take performance enhancing drugs, athletes and things like that will take human growth hormone,
right,
to try to improve on muscle gain and reduction in body fat. So it's fantastic for gaining muscle, reducing in body fat. And it's interesting that your body is prompted to increase this hormone whenever you're in a fasted state. That is kind of fascinating to me, right? Why the body wants to do that.
You know, I can't remember. This is where we need our producer. I can't remember. Isn't it high if bodybuilders or athletes are taking HGH or, you know, some type of growth hormone, if they take a lot of it, it'll start turning their cartilage into bone. Have you heard that?
Wow, I have not heard
that. Yeah, no. I think that's right. I lived with two, track athletes. And, I remember there was a big famous British runner back then called Ben Johnson. And he was setting world records and won the Olympic gold in the 100 and 200. And then they found out he was on heavy doses of HGH. And Florence Griffin Joyner was running back then, and they were about to catch her too, and she retired. And her record still stands to this day. And the reason that they thought she was on it is that her time dropped an entire second in 1 year, which is unheard of. Dropping a full second off your time in 1 year, I mean, that's near impossible to do in a 100-yard dash. So I think that's right. You know, I might be messing up my times on that. I mean, I just know that the amount of time she cut off was unheard of. Anyway, so a lot of research was around that at the time. And I think I remember that heavy dose of HGH will start turning your nose start to turn hard if you're on it for a long period of time. And it also yellows your eyes.
There's definitely some weird things that it does that I've seen like evidence of. But, you know, the good thing in this case, see, those cases are abnormal amounts when people are taking, you know, artificially high amounts of growth hormone that they shouldn't naturally have. You know, this is a case where your body is releasing a very normal amount.
Exactly.
That your body expects and understands how to process accurately. Because we all have different levels of human growth hormone in us, especially when we're younger. It's just we don't want that to get too out of balance.
Well, I mean, it speaks to the value of growth hormone, that it's such a great component of the body that it can be abused. And so, you know, I know that when I saw this, I thought, you know, another reason I'm going to be jealous that I can't do it right now. So,
yeah. Next is cellular repair.
Yep.
It says your body starts important cellular repair processes such as removing waste material from cells.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had it explained to me this way because it doesn't really make sense. So it says cellular repair. Why does your body repair its cells whenever you're intermittent fasting, when you're in a fasted state, when you're not eating?
Yeah.
And how it was explained to me was your body doesn't have to focus its energy and its resources to digesting food the way that it does when you're constantly eating. And whenever it's in that sort of fasted state, it's kind of in a rested state, and it can begin going out and putting its resources towards the areas of your body that are diseased or broken and need repair.
Right.
And that's why your body repairs cells whenever you're fasting.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. You know, it's not the most, I'm sure there's a way more scientific explanation for it, but that's a way that kind of made sense to me. And, I think is a huge added benefit.
Well, there's a lot of things that we kind of put at a layman's term level, even with our clients, because I remember when studying for our certifications, those terms, I was like, I'll never be using these terms, you know?
Well, no, I mean, so it doesn't, not only are we not trained up enough to be experts in a lot of these terminologies, but even if we were, you know, the average person doesn't understand it when you talk in those terms.
Exactly.
You know, like I don't really know, if you use all these technical terms, I'm not really going to know what it means unless I'm extremely studied up on it. But I think that's where being able to, it shows that you understand it if you're able to take it, take a technical analysis and then break it down in a way that people could understand it, that aren't educated in that area.
Exactly.
And so I think that's extremely important. Another one it lists here, gene expression. Says beneficial changes occur in several genes and molecules related to longevity and protection against disease.
Yeah, well, I'm not. This is something I would have to look up. What when it says gene expression?
Yeah. So changes in molecules related to longevity and protection against disease. I guess. That kind of goes hand in hand maybe with the cellular repair,
mm-hmm.
when the body's beginning to alter itself and protect it against death and disease, essentially.
Right.
And it's understanding that the issues that are out there. I'm sure there's like immune benefits too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right, from fasting. I do know that that's one of the things I have found is it's kind of like when you're sick. Everyone always talks about like, oh, when they're sick, like they don't want to eat. They don't have an appetite. A lot of people like lose weight when they're sick because like they're not eating. They just don't really feel like eating. But the kind of accepted treatment for when you're sick is, oh, well, you need to eat. Right? You need to eat. You need to have your strength so you can fight off this disease or whatever.
Right.
But I think that our instinct to not want to eat comes from somewhere. And it comes from the fact that our body is sitting here saying, hey, we're devoting all our resources to fighting off this disease and improving our immune system. If you eat, now we have to divert those resources to digesting your food, and we can't fight off the disease. Because I know that happens to me a lot of times if I start to feel like I got a cold coming on or not feeling very well. A lot of times doing a short little fast of 16, 24 hours or whatever will help it clear up. And maybe if I have been fasting and I do start to feel pretty good and then I do eat, then all of a sudden I'll start to feel a little bit sick again.
Interesting. Yeah.
I've noticed that.
That's interesting because, and I don't know, I don't think this is, there's only one other time that, where I'm sick and I feel great. And that's when I was a big runner. I used to feel, I could be sick to my stomach or just some, I could have the flu or something. And if I could get out and go running, take about a mile and a half, 2 miles, and all of a sudden I'd start to feel normal. I wouldn't feel the sickness. It would just, the runny nose and it would just start to fade away. And something about that exercise had a mitigating effect on my sickness. And, it's like, man, I wish I could just run forever until this sickness was gone. But I used to run when I was sick, and it would take away the symptoms while I ran. I'd feel good while I ran.
That's but, interesting.
Yeah. I would be curious about Amber if she's experienced that.
Yeah. I'll have to talk to her about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I was sick, I would push myself. I knew I would feel weak. It wasn't like I was set a record time or anything, but I knew I'd feel weak probably the first mile or two, but after that, I felt great. I loved it. It was crazy. It was a weird effect.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the number two benefit on the list here is intermittent fasting can help you lose weight and visceral fat. That's kind of the losing weight piece is kind of the main piece for people who do intermittent fast. Typically, mm-hmm. the motivation behind it is, hey, it's really helped this other person in weight loss, so I'm going to try to do it as well for weight loss. And kind of the theory behind that is, if you restrict your eating to an 8-hour window versus what you're used to, maybe a 14-hour window or whatever that the average person is, restricting the time is also going to naturally restrict the total caloric intake and the total amount of food that you eat.
Oh, yeah.
Thus helping in weight loss.
Yeah. I mean, I know that just if I get up later in the day, like if I decide I want to get up at, let's say, 8 or 9 versus, 5 or 6, I'm not going to get as many calories that day just because I know how much I can eat. And so, yeah, I mean, it just makes sense. It's just logical. And then obviously, you have lower insulin levels, so you're going to burn more calories.
Yeah, absolutely. And the visceral fat component, so it adds visceral fat in here. And I think the visceral fat component comes from when you're not eating. Like if you eat, that is calories. What are calories? They're a measure of energy. Mm-hmm. So that means you have energy to burn off. So if you eat, your body burns it off. You're not going to burn any fat.
Right.
Because your body's just burning off what you ate.
Right.
But let's say you don't eat, and then your body still has to function. You talked about the running, or you run or you exercise or you just live and you don't have any food in you. Where are you going to get that energy from?
I was going to pull it from what's in your body already.
Exactly. It's got to come from in your body already. We know from Isaac Newton, the energy can never be created nor destroyed, right? I mean, it's got to come from somewhere. And it comes from inside your body, and it comes from your fat storage first.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you're able to burn off that visceral fat through intermittent fasting.
Right. Yeah. And it's also got, here it was talking about it. A review of 27 studies that were doing intermittent fasting lost an average of basically a little less than 1 to 13% of their body weight. Now, I don't know of those 27 studies what the average, what the average of the time frame or how they were run, but.
Looks like it says 12 weeks. I think 12-week way long up there study. Above.
I didn't see that. Okay.
Which is, so 3 months, and the average, it was between 1 and 13% body weight, but the average was 9% body weight in 3 months. And that's pretty significant. But they did say that these people they studied all were obese. So they all had a significant amount of weight to lose.
Well, 9% of 250 pounds is quite a few pounds.
It is.
You're probably looking at 22 and a half. Yeah, that's right.
So in 3 months. And that's what I think a lot of people do find, especially people that are very overweight. When they do try this, they do tend to lose a lot of weight very quickly.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of the allure to it, is kind of the fast, losing the weight fast. And you don't want to lose the weight too fast. But the more that you have to lose, the faster that you can lose it healthily.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. So it looks like a number 3 can reduce insulin resistance and lower your risk of type 2 diabetes.
Absolutely. And that's just kind of goes back to what we've already been talking about. You're not eating for a 16-hour period, so your insulin is going to drop.
Mm-hmm.
If you're constantly eating every 3 hours, 2 hours, and you're taking in carbohydrates, which most of the standard American diets are made up of a lot of carbohydrates, and you're taking those in every 2 or 3 hours, well, the carbohydrates, when they break down, is what spikes your insulin.
Right.
So if you're constantly having these insulin spikes every 2 or 3 hours because you're constantly eating, then your insulin is going to remain highly elevated, chronically elevated. Chronically elevated insulin levels leads to type 2 diabetes. So an intermittent fasting, a 16-hour period where you're not eating, is going to give your body an opportunity to reduce those insulin levels, because you're not getting those carbohydrates, you're not getting those sugars in. Your insulin levels will drop during that time, help them normalize. And then if you do eat some sugars, even in that 8-hour period, they'll come back up, but then they'll go back down when you fast again the next day.
Right.
You end up with normalized insulin levels, and a lot of people see improvement in their type 2 diabetes. I talked about here the reduced risk of type 2 diabetes, but also the improvement in the disease as well.
And I don't know when you want to, what bullet point you want to talk about this. I am going to be curious, this, and maybe we should have covered on point two, but I would like to, you know, discuss how you are feeling during your insulin, or sorry, excuse me, during your intermittent fasting, you know, the hours going through it.
If I'm doing intermittent fasting and I'm on like a regular, like it, my first day back doing it, or if I've been doing it for like a month straight, which, cause it's a big difference.
Yeah. I think for the, we should cover both. And one is because the people are listening to this and they haven't done intermittent fasting, what should they expect?
Well, I definitely think any amount of fasting, the first time is always the hardest, mm-hmm. because your body's never done it before.
Right.
And so if you've never fasted for 16 hours before, it's going to be very challenging, right? Once you've done it a few times, it's just going to happen. You're not even going to notice it, really. But what you can expect is at the time that you would normally eat. So let's say you want to do a 12 to 8 p.m. eating window, and you want to not eat from 8 p.m. to 12 p.m. So noon to 8 p.m. is when you will eat. So let's say 8 p.m. comes around, you stop eating. You get ready for bed, you know, you go to bed, whatever, you sleep. You get up in the morning, and you're used to having breakfast first thing, and you don't eat breakfast. First, you're going to get really hungry, like really hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Because your body says, hey, you always feed me. Feed me. And you don't. Hey, you're late. You know, come on, you need to feed me. And a lot of people cave there, right? A lot of people... I'm so hungry, I got to eat. Well,
and what period is this part?
This would be like the next morning. Whatever period you're used to, because everybody, you know, everybody sleeps, right? Everybody goes a certain amount of time without eating, even if it's only 8 hours that you're sleeping. Everybody goes a few hours. So once you hit that time frame that your body's used to eating is when the hunger starts. If you're used to having breakfast at 8 a.m., then you're going to get hungry at 8 a.m. But it's fighting through that hunger. It's willing to resist it and willing to say, okay, this will subside if it lasts long enough. Because eventually your body gives up. Eventually your body will say, okay, I'm hungry. I'm telling them I'm hungry. You're not feeding me, so I'm just going to give up. And your hunger will go away. But then if your body's not used to the drop in insulin that will occur and the lack of energy that your body has to burn, the emptiness, you will experience a bit of a crash, an energy crash, like, oh, I'm just so tired and I'm hardly having energy. And that will last for another couple hours, but typically you'll come out of that too. And if you are willing to go another couple hours, you'll get to the point where you will be back to your energy levels from before. And it will be like you didn't eat, but you won't really feel any different than if you did.
Mm.
And then if you were doing a 16-hour intermittent fast, by the time your next meal rolled around, like lunchtime, then you would eat, because that's noon time, and that's when your eating window would start. So you'd really only be missing kind of one meal. You'd have to deal with a few hours of that difficulty.
Right.
That would be like a day one. If you were doing it on a regular basis, what you're going to start to notice is that you're going to get up in the morning – and you're going to feel really good. You know, you're not going to eat breakfast. You're not going to get hungry for breakfast because you don't ever eat breakfast. Your body's not even going to think about it. You're going to have a mental clarity that can never be matched when you're eating, right? You have no, you know, you've just been sleeping. All your food has been digested through. Your body is at a kind of a state of rest and clarity. You can think about things. You're more productive. That's what I kind of noticed. Like I said, your mind is clear and you're going to roll right into your time when it's time to eat. You know, you're going to get hungry when noontime rolls around and it's your eating window and you're gonna, and then you're gonna eat and you're gonna be just fine, and you're not gonna experience the energy levels going up and down the way you did at the beginning. You're not really gonna experience any excessive hunger. Your body's gonna get into the habit and the routine of doing that. And it's going to become normal for your body,
right?
At a certain point,
right? Well, I think I've mentioned in the past, I used to, when I was in my 20s, I used to fast for 24 hours. I would go the whole day and go to bed at midnight, and I'd fast throughout the day and just drinking water all day, and then midnight would come around, and usually, you know, I'd go to bed before then, so I'm really not eating for more than 24 hours. So I used to do that for a while, and I remember when I first started, it was difficult, but I got used to it. And it wasn't for health benefits at that time. It was for spiritual reasons. And then, I started. And I remember it got to where it wasn't that difficult. Right. And people used to be like, I can't believe you're just drinking water. You know, some days I would have a little piece of bread here or there. I remember that. But for the most part, it would just be water or a little bit of bread and water. And so I did that for probably that was my late 20s. And but by the time I got into my early 30s, I was struggling with really bad migraines. So, so that's my experience with it, is that I literally did it for full days. But I was much younger, you know, and I missed some of the mental benefits that I experienced during that time. It seemed to give me mental clarity that I hadn't experienced before when I did that. So, and which will be coming up in our benefits here.
Yeah, I would say the main difference on a 16-hour fast to a 24-hour fast is going to be missing that second meal. Because when you miss that second meal, your body does something a little bit different. The first meal you miss, right, we talked about it, you get hungry, you have a little crash, but then it comes back because your body, I think, just kind of assumes it was just a one-off, right? Mm-hmm. You just missed a meal, mm-hmm. Something happened, you missed a meal. But when you miss a second meal, same thing happens. You'll get hungry. You'll kind of crash, but then your body doesn't bounce back the same way, because then it says, uh-oh, now we've missed two. Like something's going on, right? Why did we miss two meals?
Right.
And a lot of times you're going to notice reduced energy starting kind of from that point, and that's going to just continue. You know, you may not get it back for a while at that point. And that's typically why, when people are doing a fast, whatever amount of time, the biggest failure point is kind of in that 16 to 24 hour range, because that's the hardest time.
Right.
And believe it or not, it actually gets easier after one day.
Yeah.
And then the following days get to be, I don't want to say like they're just easy, but they are.
No, they're difficult.
First day or two.
I do remember it. I did it on Wednesdays and Fridays. And then I went to where I was just doing it on Wednesdays. Because I was struggling at the time, you know, when I got my nerve third. And then I just had to quit. Because I was just, you know, the migraines were just too frequent. So, but no, I do admit that. I think that was the one thing I realized. There were two things. One, by the mid-afternoon, it didn't seem that difficult. Right. And I'd done it for a while, and just the mental clarity I seemed to acquire when I was doing it. Cause I was doing, at that time, I was doing some pretty mental, focused work where I was working on branding campaigns, and you had to be as creative as possible. So I was doing that during that time, you know, and it didn't seem to affect my work. So, you know, I would, just from my own, you know, personal experience, I would say it helped with that aspect.
I would concur. Yeah. I would agree with that.
You found that it gave you some clarity?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if I have to try to spitball at an explanation for that, I would say if your body is not eating, then your body doesn't necessarily know that you're doing that by choice.
Right.
Right? Your body doesn't know whether you're doing it by choice or whether you just can't find food. I mean, maybe there's no food available. It doesn't really know the difference. And so if you're not having food for a day or 2 days or whatever, you're going to start getting that clarity, or even half a day, right? You're going to start getting that clarity because your body's starting to say, oh man, we need to be able to focus so that we can find some food. We can go hunt something, or we can go, you know,
yeah,
work to earn, or, you know, earn some money and get some food or something.
Right.
I think that's got to be part of it.
It's interesting. You know, there's a show out there called I Should Be Dead, or I Shouldn't Have Survived. And it's about these stories that my dad used to talk about this when I was a kid. And he'd say, you don't understand how powerful the mind is. You know, the mind is extraordinarily powerful if you can harness, you know, and dig deep in its survival mode. And he would talk about, you know, if you... things that you wouldn't do on a normal day basis because it would hurt or be too tough or too physically challenging. If you're in survival mode, there's a lot of things that suddenly you can do. And then this show came out several years ago, and it was a series of people that survived extraordinary situations that the human body found a way to survive. And, you know, where it was amazing they survived. And it was only because the body starts to say, I must survive. I must fight through this. And, you know, and that could be part of it as we start. Usually, if you're in a survival situation, you're not eating. And so that's when you are able to dig deep because you have no other choice. And survival, you start thinking very clearly because... Your survival depends upon it. So it makes sense.
That's got to be part of it. Number four benefit. Intermittent fasting can reduce oxidative stress and inflammation in your body.
Yes.
And that kind of goes hand in hand with a little bit of what we already talked about with the cellular repair. During the times of fasting, your body can't attack the things that are wrong with your body. So the oxidative stress, which is a lot of outside factors that break down cells, you know, the toxins and things that we are exposed to,
mm-hmm.
cause stress. They're in our environment. They're hard to avoid. Same thing with inflammation. You know, our body is inflamed for a various number of reasons and toxins and things that get in our body. And that's what your body is going to start repairing and fighting off whenever you're in a fasted state and doesn't have to focus on digestion.
Right. It mentions protein here. It involves unstable molecules called free radicals, which we've learned about in our past, which react with other important molecules such as protein and DNA and damage them. So also it removes those free radicals that damage protein and DNA. Interesting. Wow. Okay.
It's kind of like a way to fight against the things that are not supposed to be in your body. You know, there's a trend that I'm not really sure it's real popular right now. Maybe it is, but it was popular pretty recently, and it's called OMAD. You ever heard of OMAD?
I think I have heard of that.
It's called One Meal a Day.
Oh, man.
And people... what is that? No, you were thinking.
No, you know. That's... Go ahead. Yeah.
But it's... Well, a lot of people will do that. It's like taking intermittent fasting to an extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a 24-hour fast, like, every day, pretty much. Or maybe more like a 22 or something like that, because they eat one meal. One big meal per day. And then people will lose weight. People will get healthier. And a lot of people are finding on those types of diets that during the one meal a day, they can eat pretty much whatever they want. I mean, a lot of times it's like some pretty junky food.
Yeah.
And still lose weight and kind of get healthier. And I think that the reason that is because of that fasting period. It's like, even if you do put a lot of toxins in your body, then if you fast for 24 hours, your body has the ability to fight them off. Now, obviously, it's still better to not put the toxins in your body, but it's a lot better than if you just ate junk constantly and your body never had that chance to go into fighting mode.
The one meal a day, isn't that how most of humanity ate until we became, we had to hunt our kills and, bring it to the family, and they probably only ate once a day.
That's probably true.
Three meal a day, that sounds like a Western. I haven't done the research on this, folks, I'm guessing, but just knowing the nature of, a lot of times when men are living in tribes or out in the wilderness, I don't know if they had three meals a day. I don't know if there was enough food to do that. So they probably hunted, maybe they ate twice a day, but three full meals a day?
Very unlikely. I think there's a lot of evidence that suggests it does more harm than good at this point, eating constantly, because you're right, our bodies weren't necessarily created to do that, because that's not how it used to work.
Right.
When we did have to go hunt for our food and things.
Well, don't tell me that, because I'm eating more than, I'm eating constantly.
You are right now. and that's another thing we can touch on, is kind of different goals for different people, right? And if you're looking to bulk up, put on muscle mass, get stronger, like, intermittent fasting is not going to be for you.
Right.
You can go through your periods of it where you do it for a while, but, to think that you're going to put on some serious size intermittent fasting is not going to happen. However, if you are looking for weight loss, leaning down, improving your health, things like that, that's when it's going to be the most beneficial.
Right. Well, and here's the thing is I eat quite a bit of food and I can't gain any weight right now, which is we had both talked about sitting down after Sturman and trying to solve that equation. And I think part of that equation is going to be just routine is going to help put a little bit more food down, but I'm going to have to definitely maintain a high amount of calories.
Well, I think it's a testament to the quality of food that you put in your body.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because if you did eat a ton of junk food to get those calories in, you would be gaining weight. It wouldn't be the weight you want.
That's right.
But it's difficult to gain weight because you are putting all the right things in your body. Your body is functioning very well. It's not highly inflamed and you're not getting diseases and stuff. So, yes, you're eating a lot of food, but it's not like it's McDonald's or anything like that.
I've been able, just in the last several weeks, I've noticed I'm getting 60 to 90 grams of protein down per meal. And so that's an improvement. And it's taken me 2 years to do that. To absorb that much calories means what? More quantity of food. So I've been really focused on, as I go forward, I don't know if I would call it expanding my stomach, but the ability to handle more quantities of food in one meal. Now, I've seen when you've sat down and had, I swear one day I saw you eat 2 pounds of meat in front of me.
Really? Maybe. 2 pounds is a rare occasion. I'm not sure I've ever gone quite that
high. All I know is I sat next to you during your, bachelor party.
Oh, yeah.
And when we went out and had meat, you put down, I probably had like a pound, and you kept going. And I'm like, holy smokes, this guy. And I swear, it's like, I think he's got 2 pounds of meat down so far.
Yeah, I may have that day, because I've never been so full in my life.
Oh, my God. You just kept eating and eating and eating. I was like, I went home and told my wife, I'll never be able to eat like Parker.
Yeah. And it does take practice. I've been eating very large amounts of meat for a long time, big steaks or just a lot of ground beef and all in one sitting, so it does take practice, and it's something your body has to adjust to as well. If you are used to only eating 30, 40 grams of protein per meal and then you go eat 100, your body's probably not going to break it all down efficiently.
Right.
Your body has to kind of get used to that.
Right, exactly. So anyway, I digress from our topic here.
So number 5 point here, benefit of intermittent fasting, is it may be beneficial for heart health. Heart health, heart disease, one of the biggest killers of people in this world, especially a young killer. You know, it gets a lot of people young, and intermittent fasting can help with that. And basically what it suggests here is that all of the health markers that are known as risk factors for heart disease are improved. And so they're kind of deducing that that must then improve heart health and heart disease, and improve list improvement in blood sugar levels, which we already talked about, improvements in blood pressure.
Yeah.
Right. So reduction in blood pressure.
Which that's a fascinating one for me.
Well, I have noticed that. I will say it's completely anecdotal, but when I was like high school, college age, and I was trying to bulk up heavy and lift a lot of weight, and I was eating very frequently, and there could be some other reasons for this, but I'll get to this later. But when I was bulking up, eating frequently, lifting heavy weight, I had elevated blood pressure. It wasn't in a state that was like concerning or anything to doctors, but they were just like, yeah, you know, this is a little higher than what we'd want. And when I started like intermittent fasting and reduced my weight quite a bit, I noticed my blood pressure is down like normal every time now. That, you know, the intermittent fasting is what helped facilitate that, but you could say that the reason is more the weight loss potentially, right? And obviously, it's still a lot of muscle too. You know, I reduced muscle and body fat.
Yeah.
But it helped my blood pressure.
Yeah, 100%. I'm currently in the exact same situation, because for my entire life, my blood pressure was 120 over 60.
Which is great.
Yeah, it's been that way into my 50s. About starting 4 or 5 years ago, when I really started putting on some mass, it's been elevated. And like 88, 90 over 130. And it's been kind of there. And the doctor's kind of, it's kind of, you know. And my doctor, last time I went and talked to him, he goes, "Man, I think you look very healthy." I says, "I think it's just because you have so much mass. The heart's having to work hard to push it in to all the mass." So, I mean, I think that plays into it as well. But it'd be interesting, you know, to see if I were to intermittent fast, how that would affect me.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Other risk factors here that it improves: blood triglycerides, total and LDL cholesterol, which is the LDL is the bad cholesterol, and inflammatory markers, which we talked about. So improvement in cholesterol is very interesting. They tell us that in order to improve our cholesterol, we need to eat less cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're finding here habits that are changing cholesterol levels aside from just eating less cholesterol.
Right.
Especially the bad cholesterol, like the LDL cholesterol.
And so that would be specifically the tiny granule LDL. There's large granule, and I don't think I call them granules, but it's another term. Large LDL and small LDL. That small LDL is the problem. So just having LDL in within itself is not necessarily bad. You know, you can't really say all LDL is bad, like doctors want to say. It's like you have to go have a more detailed blood work to kind of break down what's making up the LDL.
Yeah, 100%. It's hard to argue. This is a little bit of a tangent, but something I was thinking about the other day. I've obviously been doing lots of research on like babies and newborns, because I have a 6-week-old.
Yeah.
And we were thinking about breast milk. And breast milk has a ton of cholesterol in it. A lot of cholesterol in it. And that's all this baby's eating. So I'm like, saturated fats, cholesterol this baby's getting is a ton, right? But nobody's going to argue that breast milk isn't the healthiest thing for a baby.
Right.
So, you know, just kind of a little side note in there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, this is like one, I want to touch on inflammatory, and I know we're only on 6, but inflammatory markers. Like, I have had been... my inflammation has been really well controlled. I've had very little to no inflammation over the last probably 2 years, you know. So, you know, I'd be interested to, you know, there's other ways, and I think clean eating helps with inflammation. You know, no preservatives, as we've talked about, no dyes, as we've talked about, that dramatically reduces inflammation. So, you know, I think, you know, as far as this is great that it helps with those issues, but I think just removing processed food resolves that problem.
Yeah, I would say that as we talk through this list, you could probably say the same thing about just eating really clean.
Yeah.
It's going to give you most of these same benefits as intermittent fasting in a way. But we'll keep going and we'll
see. So six is a big one.
Yeah, it says intermittent fasting induces various cellular repair processes, which is a bit redundant to what we already talked about, because we already talked about cellular repair a little bit. But it's a very important one, and one that we don't want to gloss over and don't want to miss.
Right.
Because the process that happens here is referred to as autophagy. That is the term for it, the term for the state that your body goes into when it doesn't have food. It's in a fasted state, and it can focus on repairing your body, repairing the ailments, the disease cells, right? It's going to attack those first. It's going to go to your body. It's going to, you have the disease cells or issues or inflammation, whatever, it's going to go to those first and attack those, because those are the most important pressing issues.
But and again, this could be a symptom of what the body goes into as survival state. To survive, it has to remove these components.
Yeah, absolutely. And it improves health. And there's an interesting little paragraph down here at the bottom. It says, increased autophagy may provide protection against several diseases, including cancer and neurodegenerative disease, such as Alzheimer's disease. That is significant, a significant claim, right? Increased autophagy, which comes from fasting. So basically this is saying that fasting is going to protect you against cancer and Alzheimer's.
Right.
That seems significant. Now we may ask ourselves, how does that happen? Well, we do know that cancer and Alzheimer's are very slow developing diseases that happen slowly over a number of years or even decades to build up to a very diseased state.
But isn't sugar a strong component of making Alzheimer's and cancer foster?
100%. It's like required in order for those diseases to thrive. But in a lack of food state, when the body can go in autophagy and can start repairing itself, it's going to attack the disease cells first. So if there are cancer cells, if there's, you know, issues going on in the brain, it's going to go to those things, attack those things first. That's kind of the theory here of what's going on. Why they think it may provide this protection is because it never allows those diseased areas to grow to a point where they're causing a problem like a cancer or an Alzheimer's.
Right. Yeah, because food, you know, depending on what you're eating, the food you're eating could have sugar or, you know, which fosters the growth of the spread of cancer.
Well, there's cancer in all of us, right? The cancer cells in everybody all the time. It's just, does it grow up to enough to become a problem? And like you said, as long as we make sure we are doing the opposite of creating a good environment for this cancer, then it's not going to grow. If we do all the things that are going to help the cancer grow, then it's going to grow.
Right.
If we don't, then it won't. And it's not, I'm sure it's not foolproof. There are so many factors that come into play. But if this is something that could potentially reduce your possibility of getting cancer, Alzheimer's, I mean, I think it's well worth it just for that.
Yeah, for sure.
So 7, it talks about may prevent cancer. So kind of the same thing there. There are evidence, it says here, from animal studies suggesting that intermittent fasting or diets that mimic fasting help prevent cancer. It does say that research in humans has had more inconsistent findings and that more research is needed. So there's some suggestive data there. We don't know for sure. I know that if you're one of those that believes anecdotal evidence and stories and things, I mean, there are countless number of stories that people have told about fasting curing their cancer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, yeah.
You hear it all the time.
Yeah, I have heard that. Yeah. Well, it makes, you know, the inconsistent findings, it makes me think that diet plays such a key role in combination. It's kind of like when we train and say, hey, mindset and nutrition. If those two things aren't in line, what we do in here is we're gonna see very mitigated to no results, right? I said, you know, so the same thing with, you know, having success at removing something from your body. It depends on what your nutrition is. You know, if you're intermittent fasting, you know, but when you eat your one or two meals a day, you're eating donuts, you know, well, that you might still lose weight, but that might not have a positive effect on removing cancer.
No, because you're still putting bad things in your body day after day after day.
Exactly.
Benefit number 8, intermittent fasting has benefits for your brain.
There we go.
So that's very important. We've talked about the potential reduction in Alzheimer's disease, and now we see even more expanded benefits when it comes to the brain.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about the oxidative stress, you know, but again, removes inflammation, the, you know, blood sugar levels, insulin resistance, and then we've also alluded to the fact that, you know, the benefits to your brain, I mean, it says right here, fasting increases levels of brain hormone called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, you know, so BDNF, which is, you know, brain, I think that's when the brain starts to starts to not decay, that's not the right word.
Degenerate,
right.
Yeah.
And so it's slowing that down. But anyway, and overall, we had talked about our own anecdotal experience is that clarity.
Yeah.
Absolute clarity.
Well, one of the things it says here is that BDNF, the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, a deficiency in that can be involved in depression and other brain conditions.
Right.
So not only clarity, but avoiding a lot of the other mental conditions like depression, probably anxiety, things like that, keeping your brain in a healthy state.
Right.
I think that's, you know, that's definitely something that we've experienced when we fasted. You talked about the clarity. I've talked about the clarity. And definitely it is the opposite of a depressive state.
Right.
It's almost like you almost feel like you're on cloud nine a little bit, right? You just feel so good. You don't even know how to explain it, right? There's nothing else that compares to, it's almost like you feel this like glowing kind of like I don't even know how to explain it, but it's a very good feeling. It's definitely not a depressive state whatsoever.
And yeah.
It's definitely not an anxious state either.
No, and you don't, even when you're wanting to eat, you don't feel it. Because why? Because you're wanting to eat. You're not thinking about depression, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There's no time to be depressed. You got to go out and get food. And sometimes that's the thing about anxiety it's a non-action kind of state. Like if you are in action, you are taking action to improve your situation. You don't really have time to be anxious because like you're doing it, right? You're fixing it. It's when you're sitting there and you're not taking action and you're thinking about it and you don't really know what to do, but you have this problem. That's when you're anxious.
Right.
But right. If you're going out, you're fixing the problem, that anxiety kind of goes away. So number 9 here, also that we've talked about already, intermittent fasting helps prevent Alzheimer's disease. So we talked about that. How important is that? Alzheimer's and cancer, like we talked about, I mean, it's worth it.
If it right. prevents it. Neurodegenerative disease, which helps slow that process.
Yeah, and they do have down here as well that animal studies that have been done suggest fasting may protect against other neurodegenerative diseases, including Parkinson's and Huntington's. So not just Alzheimer's, but it kind of expands from there.
My next door, isn't that what, was it DiMaggio had Huntington's disease, or was that Mantle?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, it was one of them, but my next door neighbor has Huntington's disease, and I've actually suggested him to a clinic that their focus is neurological science. And, you know, if we've talked about, they have those measurement devices, which is the Wavi brain scan, and they have some other devices now, and then they have some intervention devices that help with that, products called Vupanex, and even the NeuroSuit has a positive impact on the brain. So that's something I'm having him go in and just, it'll help mitigate that disease and its effects, because he's got that hitch in his walk now because of that disease.
Yeah. And the last one here that we're going to touch on, the 10th one, is intermittent fasting may help you live longer. So I guess it kind of makes sense when you think about, we talked about reduction in neurodegenerative diseases, reduction in heart disease, reduction in type 2 diabetes. If you reduce the likelihood of all these diseases that are frequent killers, you're going to also expand your life.
Yeah.
Your lifetime.
Yeah.
And so, makes sense.
Yeah, and again, this isn't the only thing that'll do it. Eating very healthy and, making sure you do resistance training is going to help with that as well.
Yeah, and where they're getting this from is, it's a very popularly cited study. I've heard of it before. It was a study in mice, but they found that the calorie restriction and the fasting in mice significantly increased their lifespan. Less calories, having them live their lives at a reduced body weight.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the same diet was fed to both of the mice, the ones that ate less and the ones that lived their life at a reduced body weight lived longer.
Okay, so here's posing the question from a personal standpoint. So I'm at a heavier weight than I probably should be for my height and weight. I mean, I've got almost just shy of 100 pounds of mass, muscle mass. And heart's having to work harder. So staying there for, let's say, 5-10 years would probably, essentially, based on that information, probably take some years or time, let's just say time, off my life.
Scientifically, I can't say that, but I have kind of come to think that based on all the evidence that I've seen and kind of...
Just even though it's healthy, it's a healthy, but it's an unnatural amount of food I've had to eat to reach this size and strength, because it's typically more than someone my size or frame is usually going to do.
That is the conclusion that I've came to.
Yes.
You don't see... I mean, think about the people that you know that are really old but still in really good shape, like 90, and they still get around and stuff. Almost all of them are very small, very skinny people.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
Even just average-sized or just kind of normal-weighted people don't typically even live that long.
Right.
It's almost the, like, really skinny people, right. And that's not to say that you got to be really skinny all the time, but the higher your body weight, I just think there's correlation to living a shorter life, even if it's muscle mass. Now, it's not right to say muscle mass is bad, and a certain amount is important. Because if you're so skinny that you can't get around and you fall over and you break bones and stuff, I mean, that's terrible for you, too. There's a balance to strike. And most people don't have enough muscle mass, but they also have too much body fat, which is a lot of the reason why we take the approach we approach, which is 95 to 99% of people need to gain muscle and reduce body fat.
Yeah,
when they come in,
you have two ideas here. One is the more muscle mass you have, the longer you live, And the other is, if you maintain a certain body weight for too long, it'll take away from your life. So that
yes.
balance in there is an interesting one. I can't say that I would know what that is. Most people that I train aren't going, they're just not going to reach the level that I'm at right now. But because they want, it just takes more than most people are willing to sacrifice. But the point is that, you know, there might be a limit to how much muscle mass you want to put on to have the longer life.
Well, I'll tell you my perspective, kind of doing it the opposite of you.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a state where you've talked about you were a very low body weight. You were a runner. You, I'm sure, had like a runner's physique, runner's mm-hmm. body back in the day. You've kind of done the opposite. You began to put on muscle mass. You began to increase your size in the last few years. I've done the opposite, right? Probably about 5 years ago, I was the biggest I'd ever been. I was about 210, 215, and I was lifting some incredible amounts of weight and, you know, extremely muscular, like large t-shirts were skinned. People like, well, you're wearing smalls, you know? I'm like, this is actually a large.
Right.
But, and yeah, on a 5'8" frame, like that's a lot of weight. And I, you know, hit some numbers, did some things I thought were really cool. And then I kind of started backing mm-hmm. off the last few years. And I'm hovering around 180 to 185 mm-hmm. right now. But that's a significant reduction in my weight. And what I can tell you is I feel better.
Mm-hmm.
I am healthier mm-hmm. based on just how I feel, but also blood work and blood pressure and things like that. And I just enjoy living my life more mm-hmm. like this than mm-hmm. I did back then.
Right.
I can't do the things that I did back then. And sometimes I get the itch to, oh man, I want to go back up and like bench 405 again. But
it takes all the sacrifice you have to make is a lot.
Yeah, I know what it's going to take and how much I have to eat, how I'm going to feel and things. I'm just like, man, I don't know. I just kind of like being 180.
And I mean, for you, I'd almost say you have a child. Raise your family, and then if you get to my age, you could try.
It's so much harder to do that at that age, though.
Well, you know, that's true.
It's never going to be easier than it is right now.
No, that's true. That's true.
But, you know, so that would be what I've gathered from it, and I haven't been, you know, there's been a few times where I've started to kind of bulk back up a little bit, but I haven't gone anywhere near that again, even though I could, and I've thought about it. It's mm-hmm. just, it's more of just, yeah, a health standpoint. Because you know, my goal, and like I said, you're in a little different boat. You're doing some things that you've never done before. But, you know, once I lifted some very heavy weight and did some very impressive feats in the gym, I kind of changed my focus a little bit to health,
mm-hmm.
right? My focus is not, oh, I'm going to be as strong as I can, lift as much as I can. My focus is I want to be very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why a lot of what I've changed over the last couple of years has evolved around nutrition and habits and things like that. Not so much what I'm doing in the gym. I mean, I know how to work out in the gym and do a level of activity that's healthy, but transforming my nutrition to be extremely healthy. I mean, sourcing as much food as we can naturally, only eating whole unprocessed foods, you know, working on my sleep and other habits and things I'm putting in my body, that's with the goal of, I want to live a very long life, as long a life as I can, right? Maybe I won't say this when I get there, but I'll live to 100, great. And I want to be healthy the whole time, right?
Right.
I don't want to live to 100 if it means that the last 15 years I'm like a vegetable, you know?
Right.
But if I can be healthy and I can have the most time I can have with my family, with my wife, with my kids, grandkids, you know, great-grandkids if I get there, and do things with them and be active and feel good and be healthy, you know?
Right.
My goal at this point is I want to expand that time horizon as long as possible.
Right.
And I'm trying to make decisions right now to do that. And, you know, as fun as it is to go up and bench 400 pounds, you know, it may take a little time off of that end of my life.
Yeah, it could. And I think, I know for me, it's probably like a psychological makeup for me, is that I find when my my workouts don't have a focus, I kind of meander.
And that's fair.
Yeah, I just kind of meander. So I have to have something I'm working towards. And I just don't put in the effort like I should. When I have something that, you know, I mean, and it also get, you know, I have the goal and I shoot for the goal, but then I do actually enjoy each of my days. I don't think about the goal. Like this whole time leading up to this event, I wasn't like, you know, I'm only going to be happy when I reach the event. I enjoyed the whole ride. The whole process was a joy for me, even though I didn't quite get to, you know, map out my nutrition and my workouts the way I wanted because of the crazy days. I enjoyed it because that's what life is, right? It's you got to take the good with the bad and understand nothing's going to be perfect. So, you know, I've been very I'm an enjoy the process kind of guy. I enjoy the journey thoroughly. I always have been that way. Even when I was in marketing, I enjoyed the process up to completing the project almost more than actually when the project was there for us to view. So for some reason, I've always been that way. But at the same time, you know, it might be a point where I do, you know, a couple of years of competition, and then it's like, now I'm going to try some, you know, full powerlifting thing, which means my bench might not be where it was because I'm going to work on my legs a little bit, and my arm might just stay where it's at. So, that's where I'm at right now. It's really, I realized this early on in my lifting. I have to have something that's guiding everything for me to not kind of meander. Oh, I'll do some of this and some of this and some of this. And, you know, I like, my brain is very wired towards each thing. Everything I do is very strategic to the ultimate goal, but I still enjoy the day. And it's that my brain's wired that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's definitely a big help. To have those quantifiable goals. Because if your goal is just health, how do you quantify that?
Anyway, I you know, that. But for me to maintain and have focus, it's something I want to do to guide my workouts.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about here as we get ready to conclude. I wanted to talk about a book that I've read, and it may be one of my favorite books that I've ever read, most educational for me. And it really, I was already interested in fasting before I read this book, but this book really took it to another level for me and helped open and expand my knowledge about fasting. And that book is called The Fasting Cure. And it is written by Upton Sinclair. It was written in 1911. It's a very old book. It's written a very long time ago. And I heard some, when I was doing some fasting research, I heard some people talking about the fasting cure. And I saw when it was written, 1911, and I thought to myself, you know, nowadays, people that write books to make money. Or they write books to sell them and to make money. Rarely do you see anybody who writes a book for any other purpose. But back then, most of the time when they wrote books to preserve knowledge and to pass along knowledge. And so I've always been very interested in old books. And so when I saw this book was this old and it was about fasting, I thought, that's very interesting. So I decided to read it, and it's an incredible book. Upton Sinclair does, about his own experience with fasting and what he did. He then wrote an article, and I can't remember what the newspaper was, but he submitted an article to the newspaper, and they published it about his experience with fasting. And so then a bunch of people that read the article tried it themselves and wrote letters back to him on their benefits, and this is like a compilation of his experiences, but also letters people wrote about their experiences.
Oh, wow.
And it's incredible the amount of diseases people reported curing or amounts of weight people reported losing. And it's interesting because the fasting he did on there was not intermittent fasting. It was what he called a complete fast. And that's a whole other topic, but essentially what a complete fast is you begin a fast, and then after, if, for those of you who have done any long fasts or like multiple days, your hunger will go away at about the 2 day mark, maybe the 3 day mark. And then in a complete fast, what he says is you do not eat again until your hunger returns. And the theory is that your hunger for the first couple days is just your body saying, hey, I'm used to eating, feed me, you need to feed me. Eventually it gives up and stops being hungry. Then you're not hungry for a very long period of time. When the hunger comes back, that's when your body is completely healed. We talked about how the intermittent fasting allows your body's resources to go out and improve your cells, kill the diseased cells, build new cells, all that. Well, once that process is completed and the body's done all the work it needs to do, then it comes back and says, oh, well, you know, now I'm hungry. We need to eat again so we can build. Because, right, you know, when you're eating, you're getting food in and your body's using those as kind of building blocks, using those nutrients as building blocks to help build your cells. And so his theory for kind of a complete healing, a complete reset, was doing a full fast, a complete fast. And that's a different amount of time for everybody.
Right.
But there have been people that have done, 50, 100 days.
What?
Oh, 100%.
No. 100 days?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of people that did. And not only that, there are some recent examples. I think the guy's name was Russell Okun. He was an NFL player.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that upon his retirement. I think he did maybe it was 40 days.
So he was trying to mimic Christ or something?
I don't think so. He didn't say that anyway in the article I read about him, but he was an offensive lineman. They have to eat like a ton of food and maintain extremely high body weights, like 300 pounds, you know. And they're in pretty good shape, but they're still very high body weights. And so he wanted to like do a reset when he retired, and he fasted for like 40 days and lost, it was like 100 pounds or something like that. But so not only this intermittent fasting, but if you guys want to take it a step further and do a little research, I think Upton Sinclair's book, The Fasting Cure, is a fantastic place to start about maybe what it's like to do some longer fasts.
Yeah, and what year did that book come out?
1911.
Wow.
Well over 100 years ago.
Wow. The Fasting Cure. Mm-hmm. Well, check it out, guys. I'm sure it's at your library.
It might be, I don't know. You can find it online.
Yeah, though, yeah.
But so great talk today about intermittent fasting and the benefits.
Yep. Like,
there are tremendous benefits to intermittent fasting, and I think it's something everybody should experiment with a little bit. You know, Matt, you're in a specific scenario where, you know, you can't really do it without getting migraines, but everybody should kind of try it and see what happens, see how they respond to it, and give it a chance, because that, you know, I think you may really enjoy it and you may find some benefits from it. There's not a ton of research out there that supports fasting, and the reason for that is there's nobody to fund it. Because nobody makes money off fasting.
No, that's a very good point.
You can sell drugs to, medications to heal. You can sell different foods that are supposed to be healing, but you can't sell not eating. There's nothing to sell.
That might be the most profound statement in the whole podcast.
Save for the last. Yes.
So guys, I'll put it in the description. When we get to the end is the most profound statement about intermittent fasting and why it's not covered.
But I think that's the biggest reason why. So you kind of got to do your own research. It's not out there, easy to find.
Right.
It's just something that, and a lot of times when people are talking about their experience with fasting, that's how you know that they're telling the truth, is because they don't have anything to sell you.
That's right.
Because there is nothing to sell you. In fact, you're going to save money. You're not going to buy groceries.
Yeah, most organizations and food companies aren't going to fund intermittent fasting.
Mm-mm. No, they don't like it.
Yeah, they want you to eat.
Oh yeah, keep buying their food. Eat the Cheerios every morning.
Yeah. Well, it's a great, great podcast. And guys, we appreciate your time every week. Our number has been slowly increasing, so I appreciate the listeners. And this is episode 27.
27, yep. Yeah.
So we'll be back next week.
Yep, appreciate all you guys for listening. And as always, we're here to help. If you guys have any questions, anything, any topics you want us to discuss, feel free to reach out. We're happy to answer.
All right. Take care, guys.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.